Okay, so one first remark. Oh, wait, I have some other set of slides. Just 1 second. Oh, did we do that in... I'm borrowing a set of slides from medical engineering one, because what I want to talk about right now, and you don't have to record this, is the lecture evaluation. Surprise, surprise. So I have tons here, and everybody can have one. So you may want to... So if you come up here, everybody can get a transaction number. Do you want to have one? Please evaluate. So I'm going to hand them out now, and I'm asking you to please evaluate this lecture. And you may have noticed, come on, you can come up here, or you can just pass them through. Okay, then just pass them through. Have you noticed those nice QR codes on the TANS? Who knows what these QR codes are for? You can just scan it with your mobile phone using a QR app, and you will be directly guided to the questionnaire. And there you only have to answer 5 questions, so it's very short. You can do the evaluation really quickly, but evaluation is really important in order to make our lectures better. And there's a couple of questions, and if you're interested, you can do the extended questionnaire, but if you're not too much interested in the evaluation, there's only 5 questions, so please do these 5 questions, and you can do it even now during the lecture. All the information is on the transaction numbers. So please evaluate. This is important for improving the lecture, and we will go through the evaluation results, what you reported, in the last lecture of this term. So we only have now essentially 2 lectures left, so we will do non-rigid registration, and we will do interventional reconstruction, motion-compensated reconstruction, and then we'll finish the lecture. So, but in the last lecture of the semester, we will do the re-evaluation results and the summary of the entire lecture, which will be very closely related to the cloud, and if you go through the summary, it can also, maybe we do it more in an interactive way. Who wants to do the summary in an interactive way? Who's taking the exam in the first exam period? Okay, quite a few. So we can go and so you can already prepare for the last lecture, and then we will talk about the contents in quite some detail for 1.5 hours, summarize everything, and then this should also give you a pretty good preparation for the oral exam, okay? Good. Did everybody get a transaction number? Did you already evaluate? Evaluate, please. Okay. I have to collect the remaining numbers, the remaining tons. Yeah. Do you also evaluate? Good. You also need to evaluate. Oh. We need you for evaluation. No. So, does everybody know what happens to the evaluation? What will be done with it? So first of all, we will go through the evaluation results and discuss about the pros and cons of the lecture, and I can use that feedback to improve the lecture. Second part is, there's a ranking of all the lectures that will be prepared. And all the lectures that are that have an evaluation less than a certain level, those lectures will have to write a statement why the evaluation was so bad, and this will be discussed in the study committees. Yeah? So evaluation is also important. If somebody is not doing a good job in the lecture, he has to explain it to the study committees. So those are also the people who decide which subjects are going to be part of the lecture and which of your study curriculum and which lectures aren't. Yeah? So there's multiple effects that this the evaluation has. And of course there's a ranking, and the best lectures, the top 10 lectures are usually published, and of course it's very prestigious to be part of the top 10 lectures. But so what often happens in the evaluation, that only people who really like the lecture and people who didn't like the lecture give feedback, but it would be very nice if we have a more thorough feedback. So if you want to improve lectures, and if you have some remarks how to improve the lecture, please do that. This is very, very dear to us, and I will try to really put that into practice and really improve the lecture. Yeah? So this is really important. I mean, good, this is not a first semester class, so I won't go through this entire set of slides, but in the first semesters, I really have to explain what happens to the transaction numbers, and your feedback will be looked at not only by me but also by other people. Yeah. So if you complain about stuff in the evaluation, and if somebody has a bad evaluation, then all the points, all the critique will also be presented to the study committees. Keep that in mind. Yeah. So your evaluation is really is able to change lectures, and of course. I will try to adopt to your feedback to improve the lecture. Okay, good. So what happens after the evaluation? There's the report in the lecture, and it's reported in the respective committees, and then the lecture is improved. Okay, did you know that? Yeah? So there's a formal process, and this is, by the way, only the School of Engineering has this formal process. The other schools, like social sciences, and they do not have this process. They have no structured way of providing feedback. And so the evaluation system that we have will probably roll out to the entire university. So everybody will probably use this system in a couple of years. So if you talk to guys from a different school, at this university, they probably don't even know about this evaluation system. Okay, so this is quite an important point. Good. Now that we have talked about the evaluation, we can go back to the actual contents of the lecture. And what we will talk about today is the actual application of variational calculus into non-rigid image registration. So let's first start with an introduction, and then we will look a bit into the mathematical formalization, and you will realize that this is a variational problem, that we can formalize this in a variational problem. And then we will look into the Euler-Lagrange equation for diffusion registration, and also for curvature registration, because these are two popular regularizers. So, and then we will look into the first variation of mutual information. Okay. So, okay. Good. Let's start. So, in the last semester in diagnostic medical image processing, we were talking about rigid registration. And this is a rigid body motion. So, you rotate, you translate. You may even allow scaling, yeah? But you generally assume that the motion is somehow rigid. And rigid motion is it also happens. So typically, if you move your skull, so the skull itself moves in a kind of rigid motion. Of course, you also have non-rigid parts, which actually happen here at the skin. But the bulk motion of the skull, you can explain with a rigid motion. And so it's suitable for some applications, but for sure not for general body motion. And so you can solve different problems with that, but generally if you have the scan of a patient at two different points in time, in particular in the abdomen, you will have significant changes. So these changes may be just because every time you lay down onto the scanner bed, you have a different deformation of your inner organs. And of course, you have breathing motion. So breathing motion is also a motion that you cannot explain by a global rigid transform. So you can explain parts of breathing motion with local rigid transforms. So for example, your ribs, they typically move like this. So they are fixed at the vertebra. And typically, your ribs look like this. And then when you breathe, you're actually rotating around this axis. And the rib, the two ribs will cause an expansion of your chest. So this would be rib breathing motion. But of course, every rib moves differently. Yeah? But you generally can explain the individual rib motion by a single rigid motion. But then again, you have non-rigid effects on the entire torso because the chest starts expanding. So what you would like to do in these cases where you have breathing motion or also heart motion, imagine the beating heart. This is for sure not a rigid motion. So you need some non-rigid way of modeling this. And you come in with non-rigid problems. And the nice thing is if you are able to solve these registration problems, you can also use registration as a new information for example, for motion compensation. So we'll talk about motion compensation in the next lecture. But so in these cases, the non-rigid registration comes in very handy. So here, for example, you see a hybrid scanner. So this is the first idea of designing hybrid scanners is that you don't have to move the patient. Yeah? So you put in the patient into the patient bed, and then you can move the patient. So you have two SPECT sensors here and here. So these are gamma cameras that will acquire the SPECT signal, and in the back you can see the CT gantry. So this is a hybrid system, but even in a hybrid system, you will still have a non-rigid motion. So imagine your patient lies on the bed and your SPECT scan typically takes a couple of minutes in order to complete. And of course, in a couple of minutes, the patient has to breathe. But your CT scan will be done in only a couple of seconds. So you typically have breath hold in the CT scan, so there's no motion, so the patient doesn't breathe. And then you perform the SPECT scan. And if you want to improve the quality of the SPECT scan, you can augment it with a motion model and then compensate for if non-rigid effects like breathing. If you only are interested in head scans, this is a suitable combination. So if you fix the head appropriately, there's not too much motion. And in particular, the SPECT resolution is pretty coarse. So if you have motion that is less than the resolution of your imaging system, then there will be only marginal effects. So for head scans, this is quite suitable. But if you have full body scans, you will run into trouble and you will need something that does non-rigid motion compensation. Okay, good. Generally, what we want to do is we want to have two pairs of images, and those two pairs are the source image and the target image. So source image S, target image T. And now we want to estimate a transform such that S is mapped to T given some constraints. So what we typically do is we do not just find a deformation field that transforms the one image into the other, but we typically constrain it with a regularizer. Because you may imagine if you have uniform areas, so let's say you have the lungs where you have more or less a uniform contrast, And then you could have arbitrary deformations. So if I just have a, let's say I have a disk and it looks like this. So this has a uniform contrast. And I want to map it to a square. Then, of course, at the boundary, I get I can map them quite well because I need to map the boundary to the boundary again. But already at the boundary, I have the problem that I could map this point, for example, to this point, and I could map already this point to this point, and I could map this point here probably to this point, and this point to this point. You see what I'm getting at? So I could have deformations that scale up a small part of the image to a large fraction of the image. So this would also be a suitable solution. In general, there's many deformation fields that will deform this one into this image. But what we typically want to have is a more or less uniform, so a plausible deformation field. And this is why we come up with regularizers. So what we probably want to have is that we have this point, this point, this point, and this point matched to the corners of the square. Yeah? So you probably want to move this a bit in, this a bit in, this a bit in, this a bit in, and then you get your square. But you could also find many different solutions that have very large deformations. So what you typically do is you try to omit large deformations in your deformation field. Or you can try, because if you have such large deformation, what also happens is that your deformation field starts wrapping up. So you get very steep curvature. So what you probably have is if you do this mapping with those three points onto the three squares, you will probably match those triangles here. You will probably match them to those triangles here. So you have a large deformation here, and then suddenly at the boundary of this triangle, you have a very different orientation of the deformation. And this results in large curvature. So you start having a function that is wrapping up internally. And you want to omit that. Okay, so now we had 2D, 2D. But of course, you can also do that for 3D, 3D. Then we are warping entire volumes. So the non-rigid registration you commonly also refer to as image warping. And of course, you can also do a 2D, 3D registration, which is then an integrated projection. So you're estimating a projection, or you're estimating the deformation such that it matches a projection. So that would be a 2D, 3D registration problem. Yeah, exactly. So you can do it in these different constraints. And of course, you can do it mono or multimodal. So we already had an example for multimodal. This is when I try to match a SPECT image to a CT image. But I can also map a CT image to a CT image. So the great advantage, if I have two CT images, they are Hounsfield scaled, and the contrast is in the same level. So if you subtract the two images, and if they are identical, if they are deformed into the same frame of reference, then the subtraction of the two should be very close to zero. And now, if you have SPECT images, and what you're essentially reconstructing is activity concentrations. So you have a very different contrast mechanism. And of course, the SPECT image must not necessarily match the information of the CT image. So you're having very different contrasts, which results in two effects. First of all, the intensities do not match any longer. So you have to also think about how can I normalize the intensities in order to make them match, such that they are in the same ballpark. And the other thing that you have problems with is that, of course, the edge information that you are aiming to register to is not necessarily the same. So you have different effects that are displayed, and then you get into trouble if you just try to subtract the two images from each other. So if you don't have an appropriate distance measure, your multimodal registration will fail. And we will see different distance measures for multimodal registration later. So in the beginning, we will just do the sum of squared differences. Then, of course, you can do it intensity or feature-based. And there's actually quite some research in how to extract features on multimodal images such that you get into an intermediate representation that looks the same. So let's say you take a slice from an MR scanner and a slice from a CT scanner, and then you do some feature extraction and edge detection algorithms in order to get images that appear the same. And then you run the registration in the similar appearing images. Or you could even do a point-based registration. So if you do point-based registrations, you end up in the category of iterated closest points. Or you can also do a point-by-point matching. So let's say you have really detected landmarks and you know those landmarks match to each other. Then you can, let's say you have a liver. Let's do a sketch of a liver. And maybe you have a different liver that looks like this. Two livers. And let's say you have detected this point, and you can find this point and this point, and you probably can find corresponding points in this liver. Then you can, then because you know the points are the same, you can just match the feature descriptors, and you will find correspondence between those points. And then you can start warping the images into each other. But now you have only a very sparse correspondence. So you know how to map this point to this point, but then you also have to think about how do I map this point to this point over there? And then you need something like a particular model to be able to describe this kind of deformation. So quite popular for these problems are thin plate splines. And yeah, of course you could just do a rigid model, then you would just do a linear interpolation. But if you do a linear interpolation between a rigid transform with these three points, you will get a solution, but it will not very well match the edges here. Good. And then you can do parametric versus non-parametric. So parametric would be that you try to find a function or a set of functions whose parameters you try to estimate to get the deformation field. And typically you use splines, or you could also use some polynomials or any kind of function to describe the deformation. Very, very popular are splines, because then you have fewer parameters. Yeah? And generally, the parametric approach is to boil down the dimensionality of the problem. But you can also do non-parametric approaches, and then you end up with really deformation fields. And a non-parametric approach would then be that for every pixel or for every voxel, you estimate a vector, and this vector describes where this pixel is mapped to in the other image. Now, if you have a 2D registration problem, you already see for these 9 pixels, you need 9 times 2 parameters, because you estimate a vector at every pixel. So if you start with non-parametric approaches, you also have a lot of unknowns that you have to estimate. And of course, you may end up with deformation fields that look like this, right? Yeah. So what you want to do is you probably want to regularize this with some kind of smoothness operator that you get a smooth result. So you want to punish high gradients in between of your deformation field. Yeah? So you incorporate smoothness here. Yeah. Okay. So these are different things you have to keep in mind. And we will now look into a framework. And in this framework, we can model all of these registration problems. And let's see how this model looks like. Okay, so generally you distinguish between rigid and non-rigid registration, and but we still can use rigid registration in the model that we're going to look at next. Generally, you have to decide for some type, kind of transform, and this is a transform that maps an n-dimensional image onto an n-dimensional image. Yeah? You create some deformation, and the output is an image again, and n is the image dimension. The next thing is, once you have decided for a transform, this could be a rigid or non-rigid transform, then you set up an objective function, and in the objective function, you describe how you deal with the image contrasts. So you will have to decide for a similarity measure. This is how you deal with the image contrast. And then you have to put in some additional constraints, and the constraints essentially describe how your deformation function should behave. Then you have an objective function, and then you need to look for an efficient solution for that objective function. And once you have an efficient solution for this optimization problem, then you can approach clinical applications and evaluate the results. And of course, you have to keep in mind there's different ways of evaluating this. And in the end, what we want to do is create something that is clinically feasible. So you may have, if you do certain mistakes, they may not be that relevant regarding to the diagnostic task. So if your diagnostic task is matching of landmarks, then even if you have wrong deformations in between, it wouldn't matter that much as long as your landmark positions are good. But if you have a different clinical application, then you may end up with very different requirements on the specific algorithm. So this is something we always have to keep in mind, that we are actually interested in solving a clinical problem. Of course, it's a lot of fun playing with the algorithms and thinking about different optimization strategies and different optimization problems, but in the end, we want to solve a clinical problem. So let's talk a bit about the notation. So we will have a source image S, the target image T. Then we need some similarity measure, which we denote just as D. And D maps to a list of arguments onto a real number. So the similarity measure allows us to compute a number. And if the images are similar, the two should have a low. The similarity should be high. And if we have dissimilar images, the similarity, this is not true. If you have a similarity measure, and if we have input the same images, then we expect the similarity measure to be close to zero. And we also have a regularization term, and the regularization term essentially describes how well the current solution, or the solution that we plug into the regularization term, how well it complies with our regularization. And we'll find different solutions for regularization. Then you need typically a weight alpha that describes the coupling between the regularization and the data consistency. So the data term, similarity measure, is also called data consistency. And you can allow mistakes in the similarity if the priority of the regularization is higher. I mean, you can get very good results in terms of your similarity metric if you allow such solutions. You just assign the intensity value of whatever 256 or 110. You just assign it to any other pixel in the other image, which is also 110, which will give you a very similar images. But the kind of deformation field that comes out of this is probably not a physiologically plausible solution. So this is why you want to assign a certain weight to the regularizer. And if it's close to zero, this means you're mainly looking for data consistency, and you can ramp up this weight until you are satisfied with the solution. Then you have some kind of displacement vector field U, and now U describes you the deformation. And the displacement vector field You can imagine it either as a volume with vectors, or you could also describe it as a vector-valued function. So if you sample this function at a position x, y, you get a vector as a result, and you want to plug in this vector for the into the deformation such that you get a plausible result. And then in the end, you have this kind of objective function, and this objective function you put into a minimization problem, and this minimization is done over the vector field. So you don't want to alter the actual source image or the target image. You're not optimizing for those images because they are fixed, but you only optimize for the deformation such that you warp the one image into the other. So this is the set of parameters or the function that we want to optimize for. And here you can find an illustration. So let's say this is your source image, and then you have some kind of non-rigid motion, and you want to warp it such that it matches another image. And this is already a 3D registration problem. Yeah? So this is for sure not a rigid function, but we're somehow deforming the image such that it matches the target image. Now you can think of different similarity measures, and there is two very common ones. The sum of squared differences, so DSSD, and this is nothing else than the integral over the entire image domain. And now you take the source image and you take the target image and you deform the target image such that it matches the source image. Okay? So when you try to write this up, notice that u of x, so u of x is a function that is dependent on x, and this is actually the argument of your target image. So you put this function into the argument such that you actually minimize the squared distance. Okay? So then you subtract the two, square it, and you integrate. And if they are similar, this integration should be small. Now you can also think about different different distance measures, and what you can also do is you can interpret or you can look at the probability density functions of the intensity values of the source image and the target image. And what you do then is you compute the joint intensity. So this is a joint histogram. So where do we get probability density functions in an image? Well, you have to compute histograms. Yeah? And then you measure the histograms, the joint histograms. And what you are aiming at is that you manipulate your target image such that the mutual information is optimized. Yeah? So here you have the joint probability function. So this is the joint histogram of S and T after deformation. And this is nothing else than the mutual information between U, S, and T. And now if you assume that S and T are independent, then you would have a minimal, so you're maximizing the mutual information in this case, right? Okay. You think of that? So this is the mutual information, and now I'm deforming them such that they have the same information. So the mutual information should be maximized at this point. Okay. Good. So you have to keep then that in mind if you're working on the optimization problem. So if you want to maximize the mutual information, then you also have to keep in mind that you have a maximization problem. And how do you convert a maximization problem into a minimization problem? Yeah, you put n minus in advance, yeah? Okay. So you multiply by minus one and then you flip them. Two very common regularizers are the diffusion regularizers, and here you essentially punish the gradient magnitude. So you want to have the gradient magnitude to be small over the entire domain of omega, which will then result in a smooth deformation field. So the diffusion regularizer will result in smooth fields. And you can also have the linear curvature-based regularizer, and here you use the Laplacian operator on your deformation field, and you do a component-wise square and sum them up, which is a measure of curvature. So you're trying to minimize the curvature. Good. Then you can also you can also ramp up this, so you can also do a different kind of regularizer. For example, if you have landmarks, you can also put this into a regularizer. In this term, if you have a set of landmarks, and these landmarks are PI and QI, then you just want to make those two landmarks match after the deformation. So you can even build a joint optimization problem where you incorporate landmark locations while preserving a smooth deformation field, or while preserving a deformation field with low curvature. So you can even include landmark information, and the regularizer would then look like this. So you have the set of landmarks that match, and then you say the landmark location after deformation, and then the Euclidean distance between those two landmarks needs to be small. So in this way, you can get also landmark information into a joint non-rigid registration problem. So essentially, what you have to keep in mind is you have to be able to describe what is the kind of constraints that I want to fulfill, what is a suitable constraint, and then you plug that all into your optimization problem. Keep in mind that you have the sign correctly assigned, and then you build up a huge minimization problem, and then you minimize this problem with respect to the deformation field. And we will now talk a bit about those optimization problems. And the nice thing is now that we can actually find solutions for diffusion registration or for curvature registration without even knowing the actual model for our deformation. So we can now work with the Euler-Lagrange equations to set up our optimization problem. We can already find the optimal point, and we can solve it up to a point where we then have to plug in our specific parametrization of our deformation field. So let's say if you have a diffusion regularization, you want to set up your minimization problem, and you minimize it such that we have a sum of squared differences here and a regularizer here. And what we will do is we will put in the diffusion regularizer, which enforces a low gradient value. And this is integrated over the entire domain. So this is just our sum of squared differences, and this is our regularizer, and this will be our functional that we seek to optimize. And what do we do? Well, we do as we learned in the last lecture. We will look for the matching Euler-Lagrange equation, and here in this case, we have relations on x, on u, and on the first derivative of u, because you have the derivative of u in here. And then you can just plug this in, and if you actually compute that, you will see that you can actually rewrite it as the, so this is just the difference between the deformed and the source image, and then you have to multiply it with the derivative of the target image in direction of hue. And you, from your regularizer, you essentially get rid of the norm. Oh, sorry. You get rid of the norm and you develop a Laplacian operator here. So if you now set this to zero and solve, then you can see that the Laplacian of our deformation field needs to satisfy the condition on the left. And this is a partial differential equation. And you can now choose for a numerical optimizer and, of course, for a specific modeling of your deformation field and solve this. So you can also play a bit with curvature registration. So we can also look at this. And now we replace, so it's always the same recipe. So you have your initial, so your optimization functional, you plug it together from some similarity metric plus your regularizer, and you may add additional regularizers with additional weights, so you can play with this. And then you plug them in. Here we now have the Laplacian operator here, and this is our curvature regularizer, and this is our new functional. And what do? Well, we now plug this in into our Euler-Lagrange equation, and what will happen is that we are able to describe this now with a second order Laplacian, and the finally what we get for the partial differential equation is this solution down here. Yeah. And you now can plug this into a numerical solver. Of course, you have to decide for your model, and then you can solve this partial differential equation, which is essentially, so this sounds very easy, but you have to look into all the details. Yeah. So actually solving this efficiently is quite some task. Now we've talked about only sum of squared differences, but we may also want to look into mutual information. And a nice effect is that, so if you look at this problem and the previous problem, so you see this, because the regularization is added in the sum, you always end up with the same term here on the left side. And now if you change the regularizer, only the right-hand side here changes, but the left-hand side of this equation is the same. So if you now want to replace your distance measure, what will essentially happen is that you only have to switch the left-hand side of this equation, and the right-hand side stays the same. So if you want to derive a solution scheme for a different distance measure, we can what we only need is the first variation of mutual information. Then we just replace the left-hand side here, and there you go. You have your mutual information-based registration algorithm. Okay, so if you want to do that, you can actually plug this in, and now you have to derive with respect to epsilon again. So we need the first variation of mutual information. And in order to compute that, you can actually do the partial derivatives. So what will happen is, you can actually look that up, that you can get from this line to this line, and then you only have the partial derivative with respect to epsilon. And you get a second term here, and the second term will cancel out. So you may want to take a couple of minutes and look at the equation to follow this. Good. And this is actually the proof that this term down here will turn out to be zero. So what have we learned? Well, you can use functionals for your non-rigid image registration. Then you can have different similarity measures. And the nice thing is now if we plug in different similarity measures, we can we will always be able to split them, or we can show that we will split them, so we can think about the variation of some of square differences or mutual information, and then once we have that, we can plug them together and set up a solution scheme. And in fact, you will find that if you work with non-rigid, with packages, software packages that allow non-rigid registration, they are built in a modular fashion such that you can actually plug together different implementation. So you can plug together your similarity measure and your regularizer, and then build a custom optimization function and optimize it. So because of the properties of our optimization problem and that we add those regularizers with weights, we are able then also to build such optimization problems in a modular way. And in this way, we can then find also a very nice object-oriented implementation. So far, we talked about two similarity measures, sum of squared differences and mutual information. And we talked about diffusion and curvature regularizer. Good. There's a very nice paper in the International Journal of Computer Vision, which highlights variational methods for multimodal image matching. And of course, the book by Modasitsky, Numerical Methods for Image Registration, is also a very good further read. So we only scratched on the very surface of non-rigid image registration. Okay, do you have any questions so far? No further questions? We can also review this when we do the summary of the lecture towards the end of the lecture time. Okay, good. Then see you on Thursday.